Okay, well, I'll get started. Everyone's so quiet. You're good. Good student.
I stole it.
Well, I'll pray for us, and then we'll jump into our time today. So, dear Lord, thank you for this group of men and women who are coming together to learn and grow as we seek to understand how to grow in our marriage and how to be closer to you and closer to our spouse. So I pray that you will help us in this task, whatever obstacles, challenges, things that face us, Lord, I pray that you will remind us of your grace for those things. So help us even today as we jump in and look at what it looks like to serve each other in that marriage, and pray that you'll give us wisdom and guidance as we do that. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Okay, if you remember, well, some of you weren't here last week. Last week we watched a video by Paul Tripp called Grace Liberates Relationships. So we had some good discussion about that, about how grace, about how sin blinds us, and it we use people for either vehicles to get what we want or obstacles in the way that we need to try to clear out of the way. So that it was a call to be on guard about that. We talked about sin being like very self-focused, very self-oriented, selfish. And just the challenges that presents, and then moved into the solution. There was God's grace, which liberates from that, liberates us from that. Whether it's that dependence upon the approval of other people, or this tendency to use them as vehicles or obstacles, and then to be able to help us move forward with that. Any thoughts as you maybe were thinking this past week? Those of you who were here last week and saw that video, did you have any future thoughts as you recalled that or sought to put any of that into practice?
It's not about me.
Yeah. So we learned that the biggest takeaway with it is what, Denise?
Well, I'm the problem.
That's right. That's right. So our question was, who's the biggest problem in the relationship? And the takeaway with it was, I am. Right? So sin tries to get us to see other people as the biggest problem, you know, if we could just fix them, but having that understanding that we're our greatest problem is really key to that. So that's good. Yeah. Any other thoughts, insights as you were thinking about that? Okay. I know some, well, I did talk to one person who was just a little curious in terms of, okay, so Paul Tripp has identified the problem, you know, he's laid it out there, but what do we do in terms of a solution? Like once you realize like, oh yeah, this is my problem, I'm the problem, and this is going on, then where do we go from there, right? Because it can feel a little bit, you can feel a little bit lost, not really knowing where to go from there. So hopefully as we continue through this class here, we'll begin to unpack more and more of that, where you go. So identifying the problem is obviously a big key to it, but in terms of where you go with it is also a key factor to it. So our focus for today is going to be on serving your spouse, And begin with a story here about Ian and Larissa. They were this perfect couple, seemingly, in a lot of different ways. They met in college in 2005. They were Christians there. 10 months after meeting, they were engaged. They were looking forward to being married. They had a seemingly very bright future in front of them. But then everything came crashing in. All their dreams seemed to just disappear. On September 30th, where Ian was involved in a very bad accident. And he had this traumatic brain injury. And so Larissa, they were still engaged at that time. She knew that their lives would never be the same because you're getting ready for marriage. He's got this very bad brain injury and he's a different person, right? He's not the same person as he was before. And that's not going to change. It's not like give it some time, you know, give it 6-8 months, give it 6 years, he'll be back to normal. He's not going back to normal. He's a different person. So people were urging her to end the relationship, to move on to somebody else. You'll have a better life with somebody else. You don't really want to get married to this guy. You're going to have to spend the rest of your life taking care of him. So what'd she do there? They challenged her, you deserve to be happy. I mean, why would you enter into a relationship like this knowing that you're probably not going to be happy a lot, or at least all of the time? Like, you don't deserve that. You should look for somebody who can make you happy. But she chose to marry him anyway. So instead of being married when they were young, healthy, and happy, they got married sick, disabled, and grieving. So their story is a very interesting story, and you're able, you know, if you go and look that up, you can trace their story here and how that goes. But she says this, she says, marrying Eon meant that I was signing on to things that I don't think I ever would have chosen for myself. Working my whole life, having a husband who can't be left alone, managing his caregivers, remembering to get the oil changed, advocating for medical care, balancing checkbooks, and so on. The practical costs felt huge, and those didn't even touch on the emotional and spiritual battles that I would face. So we won't put anybody on the spot to ask, you know, would you have done that? Would you have continued with it? It's a tough, tough question, tough decision right there. But she chose to, even knowing that she was getting into all this. So we know that marriage can be difficult. We've been talking about it as we've been going on here. It means that we sign up for this commitment to serve the other. And there's no clause in that covenant that we make about how easy or how hard it is, right? It's not, I'll do this if it's an easy route. It's no matter what, in the good and in the bad. And so we're looking at, again, what it looks like to serve our spouse through some difficult seasons, through some different seasons. All of you here today are in a particular season in your marriage, and that season's going to change. So you're not going to be in this season forever. It'll come and it'll go, and there'll be another season, right? And there'll be challenges with that, and there'll be good things with that. So it's good to be prepared for whatever that season you're in now, and then any of the ones that you're going to face. Let's take a look first here in Matthew 16, 24 to 26. I think that is on your handout there. But somebody, if not, would someone mind to read that? Matthew 16, 24 to 26.
And Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in return for his soul?
Yeah. Sorry, some of you may have last week's or the week before's, but we'll get some more copies next week. But yeah, there's a passage right there that really challenges us, right, in terms of serving. If you're going to follow Jesus, you have to be willing to deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow him. There's no advantage if one gains the whole world but forfeits his soul. And so we know that the Christian life is not an easy life. It's a life of denying self. It's a life of cross-bearing. What's that look like? As you think about marriage and, you know, it may not be your experiences, but others you know, what does that look like? What are some examples of that, of denying self and bearing the cross in terms of following the Lord in the context of that marriage? Can you give me some examples? Talking about marriage, yep. So what's that look like in the context of marriage? As you think about this, denying self, taking up your cross, and following Christ.
There's a lot of times that there may be things that you want to do, but, you know, whether it's to uplift your spouse or to help them walk through something, it may not be something that you want to do, but it's putting aside what you want and walking with them.
Yeah, good. Yep. Mm-hmm. Do any of you ever encounter that? Moments when you have a plan, you have things that you want to do, and they don't want to do that, or they don't do it like that. And so you're going to do one of two things, right? You're either going to, this is how it is, this is my way, or it's going to look a little different, isn't it? So I think every relationship has that. If we're not aware of that, that would be a really key component, because that would maybe raise a couple more questions of, is this happening in the context of a relationship? You know, are we laying down our privileges, our desires? We'll talk here a little bit later on about this whole idea of rights or needs, but laying that down for the sake of the Lord and for the other person. And if that's not happening, that's obviously going to create some significant struggles in our relationship there. So I think it's good. It sets the stage, doesn't it, as we understand this call to follow Christ. That's going to play out, you know, within the context of your whole life, whether it's your work or your Christian calling, but in particular in your marriage, this is going to come into play. So one thing that we should know then about serving our spouse is that it's going to cost us something. As you think about that, it's not always going to be an easy thing where it's going to feel good and not take any effort. There are going to be times and places where it's really going to cost us things. We could have used that money or that time or that effort on ourselves. Sometimes, again, that's easy, but other times it's difficult. So when we get married, we're signing up for that kind of life, a life of serving the other, both in the easy times and then in the hard times as well. Now, as we talk about this idea of serving, I think it's important for us to know that serving means meeting real needs, not ones that we create or invent. So there can be a time and a place, in other words, for doing things that that for helping our spouse that they don't actually need help in. But there's definitely needs to be the time and place for doing things that actually benefit them. So, for example, the husband that says, "Well, I'm really going to serve you this week. You know that spot out in the yard? I went ahead and got started on my man cave out there. That way I can just move all my stuff out there, you know, and have that place and get it all fixed up. And then you won't have to worry about those deer heads and the guns and stuff like that. You know, I know that was a huge commitment on my part. You can thank me." Right? I mean, she may say, "Oh, that was a wonderful thing. That was exactly what we needed around here." But it very well could have been, "Really? Really? Okay, I see." Right? That really wasn't a legitimate way in which she would benefit from that. So, I mean, again, there's a time and place for both of those. So Jesus, if we keep that in mind, Jesus serves us in ways that we actually need the help. He doesn't serve us in ways that are good in potential or good in theory, but don't actually benefit us. Anything that Jesus does truly benefits us. So let's, with those things in mind, let's just take a look at some of the different ways that we can serve our spouse in some of the different seasons of life. So we'll look at them here. I've tried to lay out some different seasons. I know there's a variety of people in the room, so some of these may apply to you, some of them not, but that's okay. I tried to get a variety here. But let's talk about seasons of young children. And maybe some of you who are through that season can speak into this as well. But for some of you moms, what's the season of young children? What are some of the challenges in that season? Maybe you've been through it and you could speak back to it, or maybe you're in it and you can speak to it. But remind us men, what are some of the challenges for you in that particular season?
There's never enough hours in the day.
Never enough time. Never enough time. Mm-hmm.
Lack of sleep.
Lack of sleep. Yeah. Lots of challenges there as that plays out in a lot of ways. Uh-huh.
Lack of alone time.
Lack of alone time? Yeah. Always got people around you. Little followers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is a particularly challenging time for moms, as you mentioned, often tired, worn out, frazzled, sleep interruptions, they don't get a day off. It's easy for a husband to justify passivity, a failure to help by saying, "I'm gone all day at work. You know, it's not really my job when I get home. I don't need to help. That's supposed to be your job here." So it's in these particular seasons that we see that a husband can serve his wife with a serving kind of love. So let's take a look at Philippians 2. Can someone read verses 4 and 5 for us? Philippians 2, verses 4 and 5.
Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others.
Mm-hmm. So, as a husband in this particular season, and again, I'd love to hear from some of you who maybe are either in that season or have been through that season, what are some ways in which you can serve your wife in this season with young children? What's that look like, you know, to meet tangible, real needs that she has?
Got a great list here already.
Gosh, really there. Just the little things, the day-to-day things that we can do. Mm-hmm. Or at least some of them.
Mm-hmm. Scott, when you were in that season, was there things you found particularly helpful for,
you know,
for Teresa there?
My mind wanders to... particularly during the winter and school coaching and all that, you know, it was just really busy. A couple of little guys, probably even more before Kaylee was born, but after dinner, I would take our kids down to our unfinished basement, and Teresa loved taking care of the table, dishes, and so forth. By herself. And I loved it too. I mean, unfinished basement, you know, little basket like this. I can remember, you can remember Matt running around in a walker at the time. You could hear the roll. You know, it was just, people laugh at that time now, but it was, hopefully it was one way. I don't know. I didn't feel like I was sacrificing a whole lot. But, diapers. I used to dress Kaylee for church.
That's right.
Tights. Those fat legs. I didn't tell Kaylee this. And I remember taking Nick to church one time when he was a baby and getting spit on three times. The third time the shirt went to church with me. Just little things like that. Enjoy now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They are demanding at the time. You guys know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Any other thoughts? Yeah, thank you.
One thing I wish I did better, as opposed to just doing something, is asking her what would be the most helpful thing for me at that time, mm-hmm. for her at that time, because sometimes it feels like you try, but you miss the mark, and so...
Mm-hmm.
Asking them what it is.
Yeah, good. So, yeah, we don't want to overlook just the little simple ways to help right there. Even as we think through roles, responsibilities, husband and wives, I think it's good. Yes, there are roles. Yes, there are responsibilities. But we also don't want to, we also have to be careful not to make it so separated that we end up with this idea that the whole role and responsibility of the wife is just to take care of the kids and do everything for them. And the whole role of the husband is just to go to work and do everything there. And there's no overlap, so to speak. So, I mean, it is part of the husband's role to help and to be part of the family and to take care of the kids just as much. So I think some of these in particular that are particularly helpful, not putting unrealistic expectations on her, trying to encourage her as much as you can. So, you know those days. I'm sure some of you can relate, and you come home and the house looks like a bomb hit it, and there's a lot of things that might not be ready to go, right? So what's not helpful at that particular moment is the question, what have you been doing all day? That's a very bad question. So a better one is, wow, it looks like the kids have been very busy all day. How can I help you, right? That's a different way of framing that one. Families have to learn, you know, even when you've got young kids and they're waking up in the night and what that looks like, you know, some have jobs where it's not, they necessarily can't do that. They got to be ready to go. But I think if they can't do that, then looking for alternative times to do that. So maybe they come home and that's when they do it, right? But not just passing the buck to the wife at that time for everything. So we know that this type of serving love is an initiating love, an initiating love. And that's the way that the Lord loves us. If we take a look at 1 John 4:9, could somebody read that, please? 1 John, so not the Gospel of John, but 1 John 4:9.
In this, the love of God was made manifest among us, that God sent his only Son into the world so that we might live through him.
Yeah, thank you. So there we have the action on God. When we use that term initiating love, that means that God initiates it. He doesn't wait for us to come to him. And so even as Scott talked about in the beginning here of the class about a husband's love, the part of that love is an initiating love. It doesn't wait to respond. It goes. It initiates it. And that's critical there. But you may be wondering, okay, you seem to be picking on the husbands here, like the wives kind of get a free pass. What's it look like in the context of them? What does serving their spouse look like for them? Because it's not a one-way street. 1 Corinthians 15:58 says this. It says, "Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain." So the wife, she takes precious comfort in knowing that her labor is not in vain. So she's not looking to her husband or to her role as a mom for her identity. She knows that identity is found in the Lord, and she can serve then her family out of that. So if she's looking to her husband for that identity, she's going to be very disappointed. As we'll get to a little bit later on in this class, talking about when dreams don't, when we don't have the Disney adventure, and when dreams don't come through the way that we would like. We'll be looking at a story in the Bible of Abigail and Nabal. So it's like, how does a wife serve her husband when he's not as supportive as she would like to have? And even in some cases, even if the husband was like Jesus, a woman can still be disappointed if she's looking to him for the wrong things, right? So it's that connection there is she has to focus first and foremost on the Lord to find her identity from him. And then out of that, she's able to serve well. So there's some ways in which she can serve out of her connection with Jesus, making time for her husband, allowing him to pursue her. Not nitpicking over the smaller things, but covering them with love, 1 Peter 4:8. So trying not to complain about the limited opportunities that she does have to get a break or the ways in which maybe she thinks that the husband doesn't serve the way that he could, but rejoicing and giving thanks. And then complimenting her husband, looking for ways to do him good. What else? I'd be interested to hear from you ladies. As you think about that particular season, what are ways in which you can serve your family, even in the context of those difficulties with young children?
I think it's good to ask your husband what his, just if he could have one thing at the end of the day, that you could serve him, and just make that a priority. So at our house, it's always, we need, I know it's important to have dinner, to have it on the table and feed the family. So through the young childhood years, it was, the house could be exploded. Kids could be sick, but the main effort was always to make sure to serve you was to put that meal on the table. So just, and if that was all I could offer, on days that were hard, that was enough. Mm-hmm. That was really good in our marriage. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm. There were times when we have four children, and there were times when, he would come home. I'd be standing at the door and I'd hand him a child. and he knew that, okay, this child is mine the rest of the evening. But I tried really hard not to do that much, mm-hmm. because I knew that coming from working in an office, or even by yourself, or being out in the car, and having a lot of more quiet time in your day, you need time to re-enter the massive chaos that was in the house. And so trying to give him space to allow those re-entry issues so that he didn't have to come in with boots on the ground right away and just have time to ease back into family life before I was demanding of him. Mm-hmm. So just having that kind of downtime in our presence before I expected him to, you know, just really go at it.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, thank you. Good. So it's a good reminder in this season that there's one thing we need more than anything, more than sleep, more than breaks from the kids, more than caffeine, and that's grace. Grace. So it's even if you have to tell yourself, I need grace more than I need sleep. I need grace more than I need kids who will listen to me. I need grace more than I need anything. It continues to reorient us, right? Remind us of what's true there. And so it's hard. It's what's necessary, though, to actively pursue the other person, even when parenting makes that more challenging. So we'll move on then to seasons of sadness. Seasons of sadness. So that's one that we wish we didn't have to talk about, but one that we do, because there's seasons of sadness in our marriages. There aren't always good words to describe when someone you love dearly is suffering. And let's take a look at Romans 12:15. Would somebody be able to read that for us? Romans 12:15.
Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So we're experiencing that when as our spouse is weeping, as they're going through something difficult, and we're weeping with them in there. It could be they have lost a parent or a close friend, or maybe the children are particularly challenging. Maybe life is just not turning out the way that we thought it would happen. There's lots of things that go wrong in our Genesis 3 world. So how do you serve your spouse? Maybe they're the ones who are afflicted and weeping. Maybe it's both of us that are afflicted and weeping. What does it look like to give them hope when everything around us can seem so hopeless? Well, I think how you serve them in this particular season depends on how you view yourself. And so this is not an exhaustive list, but just a few different ways that we may be tempted to view ourselves in this season of suffering. One would be a distracted dad. I just use dad because D&M didn't make as much sense. So we could call it distracted mom too, right? But they're not fully present. They're there, but they're not really present. And so they're able to keep things functioning. They're doing enough to help out, but not really serving with presence. And they can justify that by work or other things in life. You know, it's, well, this is why I'm not really here, because I've got this going on or that going on. So if that's us, if we're distracted and we're trying to serve our spouse, it's challenging, right? It's gonna send them a message that we really don't want to send them there. So we're trying to, in this season, serve them with the attitude of, you are first. You are first. And that's sending the message that we're supporting them in these seasons of suffering. So that could be one particular way in which we find ourselves, is we're just very distracted. And that is going to make it challenging to serve the other person well in this season of sadness. So the solution to that would be to put those distractions in place, right? To prioritize Christ, prioritize the other person, and to put those other things back in place. Now, seems easy. It's easy to say that. I know, but the challenge is the more in difficulty of actually doing that, of keeping those priorities right. But the first step there is even just owning up to that, acknowledging, oh, that is me. So if you're maybe in this particular season, or maybe that's your particular way in which you have identified, that's me, I'm distracted. What are some ways that you've found helpful to reduce those distractions so that you can better focus on serving the other person in this season?
I think our biggest distractions in our modern era are phones that we hold in our hands all the time. So finding time to put that down and put it aside and focus on family. So.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yep. Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Mornings were always rushed at our house. We had the girls, but I babysat for 23 years, so I always had kids. I always tried to have clothes out, lunches made the night before, and I always tried to send them out with a good attitude and a smile. It didn't happen every day, but the days went a lot better if we weren't rushed to have to do certain things.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good. So just, we can challenge ourselves too, to seek to leave those things from our job or our outside life at the door. So when we come in, I'm going to be prayed up for this. I'm going to set my mind, how can I serve my family? To try to leave those things outside so that as we come in, we can be more present there. Another way that will, if we view ourselves, that will affect how we serve the other person is as a sacrificial savior. So when we serve our spouse, what we're trying to communicate to them here is that I want you to know how much I'm sacrificing for you. Now, we wouldn't say it like that. We might, but that's kind of how we view ourselves, is I'm the sacrificial savior and I'm just doing so much for them. And they just need to see that and appreciate me for that. And so even in our service, we can become selfish. That's the irony of it, right? We can use our service to really enhance our selfishness. That's the downside to sin right there. And so thinking back to what Peter says in Matthew 19:27, he's saying to Jesus, "See, we have left everything and followed you. What then will we have?" Well, Peter gets off track too. He can get in his mind this idea of, well, I'm serving you, right? There should be something in it for me. And so we can go off track in the way that we serve. We can turn our spouse's suffering into our own suffering and celebration for ourselves. So, for example, we could drop hints about what it's costing us to serve them. They're going through, I don't know, maybe they have the flu or something, and they're sick. And they need you to pick up some medicine and run some errands for them. And so you do that, and then you come home and you tell them about that trip. Oh, you should have seen what I had to go through for you. That long line at CVS. Oh, that pharmacist. Oh, man. She just couldn't get it together, right? And I was there in that line for 15 minutes. 15 minutes. Right? So we can begin, you know, it becomes all about ourselves ultimately and what we've had to suffer in order to serve them. So that's not right. But Jesus reminds us that our reward is heavenly. So he reminds us here in Matthew 6. Could somebody read for us Matthew 6 verses 1 to 4? Matthew 6, 1 to 4.
Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you.
Mm-hmm. So our point here is, if we're making serving our spouse about ourselves, we're missing out on the reward that Jesus has for us. So you have to be, you have to watch, be on guard for that. That even though you're, you may be doing good things for them and serving them, if your heart's not in the right place, that's really undercutting all of your efforts. So we want to avoid that trap. Now, a third category that we could find ourselves in as they're suffering would be the separated sufferer. The separated sufferer. So we're serving them, but we're remaining at a safe distance from them. We don't want to get too emotionally invested. We're not comfortable with the deep cries from their heart. So there's this safety, you know, there's this distance that we set up of like, I don't know, I just don't think I can take that. That's hard. That's too personal. I need to remain back a few steps here. We don't really like not having the words to say. It's awkward, right? When our spouse is crying and they're pouring out their hearts or whatever the case is, and we just don't know what to say. We don't like being in that spot. What do I say? I don't know. So we try to get out of that. And so we serve from a distance. Again, it's good to do good things for them, but it misses this element of closeness, that this oneness that we should have with them. And so let's just think of how Jesus gets close to us in our suffering, and Jesus doesn't back off from us. Could someone read Luke 5, verses 12 through 16, please? Luke 5, 12 through 16.
While he was in one of the cities, there came a man full of leprosy. And when he saw Jesus, he fell on his face and begged him, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I will, be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him. And he charged him to tell no one, but go and show yourself to the priest and make an offering for your cleansing, as Moses commanded, for a proof to them. But now even more the report about him went abroad, and great crowds gathered to hear him and to be healed of their infirmities. But he would withdraw to desolate places and pray.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So let's talk about this one for a moment, will you? What are some ways you found yourself perhaps struggling in this category? Separated, you know, not just reluctant to move closer to them, more comfortable to stay back just a little bit from them. What's maybe some examples or ways that that's looked like in your own relationships? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our background plays into that, what we've seen our parents, how they've handled things like that. Yeah, that's definitely a factor in that. Mm-hmm. Let's think about it this way. I'll throw another question to get at you. How many of you, your response would be more toward, I'm going to be intentional about stepping closer and moving into that space, even if it's difficult? Or would your typical response be other ways to handle that, such as I'll find more things to do. You know, we'll go places. We'll do things. That'll take their mind off of it. Or I'll have more busyness. I'll have more things to do so that I don't have to be around that as much, because it's hard. It's uncomfortable. And I don't like being in that space. Which one of the two would you say is maybe more your default? Is it to move closer, even though it's harder, or would it be maybe to take a step back and have like other ways in which you're compensating and working and instead of pressing in?
I think it's way easier to not carry another person's burden, even if it's a person you love. It's way easier to want to change their circumstances, you know, take them out, do something fun, you know, distract, but then you come back and you forget that circumstance, the environment may have changed for a second, but the circumstances never changed. So I think part of our vulnerability is walking into our spouse and listening. Like, so we want to talk, and I think that's part of a big wall that as a spouse you put up, is instead of listening to them and their grief, you push it away by just talking to them about their grief, if that makes sense. So it'd be like, yeah, I'm sorry you're feeling sick. Like, you really should get better. I really hope you get better. But in essence, it should be like, tell me how you're feeling. Okay. Like, what does it feel like through this? And that's like just a silly, you know, a sickness is silly, but like something more in depth of like, you know, a special needs child. So like, yeah, we should be doing this better for our child. We should be doing this. I really wish this could change. But as a spouse, you can say to your grieving child, your grieving spouse, like, okay, how does it make you feel when you see this and you feel like this? And so you're entering their world through questions, but a lot of times we have pulled ourselves back into speaking into their world with our opinions. And I think that's part of us pulling back. So when I think it looks like we are busying ourselves, but we're actually putting up a wall of not entering their world. And I think that's a big part of what I struggle with a lot of times is like, let me just talk into your world rather than like, how are you feeling about this? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, that's perfect setup, Kelly. Even though we didn't talk about this, it was like we read each other's minds. So,
one or something.
You're going to get your money's worth out of this class. So here in this video that I'm going to show you. Now, some of you may have seen it, but that's okay. It's worth a second watch. But guys in particular, this is when you pull out your notepads, okay?
It's just, there's all this pressure, you know? And sometimes it feels like it's right up on me and I can just feel it, like literally feel it in my head, and it's relentless. And I don't know if it's gonna stop. I mean, that's the thing that scares me the most is that I don't know if it's ever gonna stop.
Yeah. Well, you do have a nail in your head.
It is not about the nail.
Are you sure? Because, I mean, I'll bet if we got that out of there.
Stop trying to fix it.
No, I'm not trying to fix it. I'm just pointing out that maybe the nail is causing.
You always do this. You always try to fix things when what I really need is for you to just listen. No,
see, I don't think that is what you need. I think what you need is to get the nail.
See, you're not listening now.
Okay, fine. I will listen. Fine.
It's just, sometimes it's like, there's this achy, I don't know what it is, and I'm not sleeping very well at all, and all my sweaters are snagged, I mean, all of them.
That sounds really hard.
It is. Thank you. Ow!
Come on, no. If you would just...
Don't...
Yeah, so, well, you know that that's a humorous example, right? There's an element of truth to that, certainly. We know that we do have to, when there are legitimate issues, right, we're not overlooking those. So it does make a point, though. We're, just as Kelly was mentioned, it's easier to talk at them rather than to listen to them, to serve them through listening and being present with them. So what are some ways in which you've found that element of listening? How's that worked out? How's that helped you? Maybe it's a particularly difficult season, maybe not, but how has listening helped you in terms of your relationship? As opposed to just throwing ideas at them, like you need to do this, and if you would just do this, but listening.
Helpful to our husbands by communicating what we need, because I know Daryl and other husbands often love through helping problem solve, and that can be very helpful. We see things differently, and So a lot of times that is what's loving, is to mm-hmm. think through things or help me see the nail in my head or another person that knows you best.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it really is just needing someone to listen. And I think as women, we can expect them to figure it out and can get upset if they don't figure it out on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if we would just, I mean, a lot of times maybe your man is going to fail anyways, but we can help out by saying, it would be really helpful if you could just hear me on this. I just need someone to listen.
Mm-hmm.
So
good.
Communication, I think, because we do need different kinds of love at different times.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you.
There was a time about a decade ago that Teresa's father had terminal cancer, and her mother progressing with Alzheimer's, and I think I did pretty good with helping her through that from the physical side of things, and you know, helping take care of it. But I'm not sure if I wonder if I didn't engage myself emotionally, as you talked about, and probably didn't really understand that well until my mother passed away about a year and a half ago, and truly understood that, you know, the more the emotional side after going through that. But I would say, as these ladies have said, I probably didn't ask and listen enough.
Mm-hmm.
It would be some things I do differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, good. Then a fourth way in which we can be unhelpful in these seasons of suffering would be to anxiously assume. And so we can be a very anxious person. We can assume the worst is going to happen. Oh, they've got the flu. Oh, that's going to be pneumonia by tomorrow. And then they're going to end up in the hospital, and they won't come out of the hospital. And now I'm going to be a widow or a widower. And it's like, oh, where do you end here, right? With this trail right there. And so they may be serving the other person, but it comes with this attitude of fear. So we're not going to be able to serve our spouse very well if we're always assuming the worst is going to happen. We'll serve them best by trusting that God will provide what's needed to faithfully supply His grace to get us through it. There's a passage there, Exodus 17, where the people are struggling. They don't have water. And so they come to Moses and they get mad at him for not providing water. And then, of course, as you know, the Lord provides water right there. So when our spouse is suffering, we can serve them well by asking questions, by reminding them of God's good purposes, even in the wilderness. So if you go back and read that account at some point, you'll notice that God led them into the wilderness, knowing that there wasn't any water there, because He had a purpose in that. He didn't just do it by accident. He did that intentionally. And so God has a purpose even as He leads us into these wilderness experiences there. So we've mentioned the listening. We've talked about asking questions. Here's some on your notes there that we mentioned. How are you feeling? What helps to ease your pain or grief right now? Are you being tempted in any ways that I can help? Where has God's word brought you water lately? So those are questions to engage them and to help them in that. And so just keeping in mind too that it's easy in seasons of suffering to lose sight of where God is. And so God's purposes in leading us into those places are to teach us more about Him. So if He's brought us into the wilderness, it's for the purpose of helping us understand Him better. He's going to provide for us. So He's going to teach us. He'll challenge us. He'll correct us and sanctify us in the process. So we can serve our spouse by reminding them of these things, reminding them of who God is, His promises, His faithfulness, even if you don't know how or when He's going to supply that water that you need. Another challenge that comes in these seasons is not feeling adequate to help them. But even as you think back there to that account with Moses, Moses gets it, right? Moses knows that he can't do this. Like, how does a person just supply water for all these people? Like, it's not going to happen. So he comes to God. What am I supposed to do? I can't fix the problem. But unlike Moses, some of us might try to fix the problem. We might try to get water where there isn't any, at least none that we can access. And then at some point, we're going to realize that we can't do it. And then we get to the place where Moses is. We're looking to God as our only hope. And so this is exactly where the Lord wants us, because it's strength in our weakness that he delights in. So you don't have to know every answer of how you're going to serve them and help them. You can still feel inadequate while knowing that God is more than plenty adequate. And so then just remember not to lose sight of opportunities that we do have to serve them. So our serving doesn't have to, you know, our serving doesn't just impact our spouse. It also extends beyond our spouse here. So, for example, when you comfort your wife when she's breaking down and crying, that could be what God uses to help another person who has witnessed this. So you may, let's just say you're running some errands that you normally wouldn't have gone on. Our spouse is sick. We're doing something that they normally would have done. But then on that errand, something happens. Maybe we encounter a person with a flat tire and we change it. We minister to them while doing that. So God provided us with an opportunity that we wouldn't normally have had, even in that difficulty there. So we'll keep going back to our theme of grace, and grace is that key to serving our spouse well in seasons of difficulty. 2 Corinthians 1, the God of all comfort provides us with comfort so that we can comfort even our spouse there. Then seasons of sin. So a third season you may run into is a season of sin, and you'll see your spouse's worst behavior. Life's not going to be all butterflies and roses. The temperature gets turned up. You can hurt each other. It could be a particular sin that your spouse has fallen into that has a lot of impacts, but it could be just be in the daily smaller sins that can quickly accumulate if we're not careful. So how do we serve each other, whether it's in the daily moments of sin or even in the longer seasons where there's a more significant one? Well, first, we can serve each other by helping each other recognize the peril that's around them. So God has placed us into the other person's life for a vantage point to speak into that situation. I think all of you know, and even what we saw from the video last time, is sin is very deceptive, and we have blind spots. We don't always see things. So our spouse can help us with that. 1 John 2:15-17, it reminds us, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away along with its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever. So the world is filled with a lot of dangerous things to our souls. We know that. We have a devil who's active, who's seeking to devour, and we need help to keep our hearts in check. So our spouses, we can be vigilant. We can help each other in that process there. So rather than me going through each one of these in detail here, I'll let you look through that later in your notes. But what are some ways in which you've found it helpful to serve your spouse in seasons of sin, whether that's the daily small things that can accumulate or even the more significant things? What are some ways you found helpful to serve your spouse in that?
Praying with them, offering maybe verses or devotions that you found, you could text to them. And...
Mm-hmm. Good. Mm-hmm.
In reading your example, having the guts to talk to them, your wife, for instance, what I always need to remind myself and failed many times in this is how I talk to her about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to do that, but to understand who she is and she may receive something,
mm-hmm.
and I need to choose my words
mm-hmm.
in a loving way. I might think I'm being loving, but she's not seeing it as being loving. So really, mm-hmm. hopefully, from other things, is learning mm-hmm. and listening to before and then using that. When speaking into
them. Yeah, good. Yeah, even thinking through that confrontation, that times when we do have to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to end with serving with mercy, because that's ultimately one of the best ways is to serve them, and it's in any season, whether it's this season or any of those seasons, with mercy. Because it's wearisome to try to serve our spouse, to help them when they're sinning against us, or when they don't seem to be changing. It's hard to continue to show them and practice the little acts of kindness. It can be hard to tell them that you love them. It's a lot easier to give in to impatience or frustration. And so mercy here is the key. You know, it's not this call to suck it up and keep enduring. What we need is to look to Christ and then His mercy toward us. And then as Colossians 3, 12 to 14 says, put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with each other. And if anyone has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must also forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. So mercy. Mercy is going to be one of your best friends as you navigate these different seasons with your spouse here. So I would encourage you to, we won't have time to get through all this, but especially that end part there, and ways that you can serve your spouse by encouraging them and affirming them. That will be really helpful for whatever season you're in right there. So let's just see any thoughts, questions from anything we've talked about today? Anything that was on your mind that has been stirring as you've been hearing this? Okay. Well, thanks for joining us today. And Scott will pick up next week and pick up for a couple more weeks here. So Lord willing, we'll see you next Sunday. So have a good rest of your day.